Are Texans ready to return to the gym? As another weight is lifted from COVID-19 lockdown orders, how's this next phase going to work out? That's story today on the Texas Standard.
Texas Standard is a production of KUT Austin, KERA North Texas, Houston Public Media, and Texas Public Radio in San Antonio, with support from Rand Group, software delivered as promised. No surprises.
I'm David Brown. A Texas Supreme Court order barring evictions is no more as of this Monday, but local governments are stepping in to provide protections to some, and we'll have details. Pets can offer important companionship to the elderly unable to leave home right now, but expenses can give many seniors pause. Now a group of Texans trying to fill the gap. Those stories and a whole lot more coming up on the national news show of You Know Where. And the Texas Standard gets underway right after this. No matter where you are, it's Texas Standard time on this first day of a new work week, Monday, May 18th. Hope your weekend was a good one. You know, for many, it's another day of work at home. In fact, there's a growing sense that many workers might never step foot in the old office again. Texas-based Dell Computer, one of the companies announcing that a large percentage of workers will be staying home after the pandemic passes. Twitter has announced those who don't want to go into work can work at home, quote, forever. And a new MarketWatch report says six prominent tech firms are considering following suit. It's not just because of COVID-19 and comfort either. U.S. workers were 47% more productive in March and April than the same months a year ago, according to workplace monitoring company ProtoScore. Many businesses and services slowly reopening are in discussions on how to make offices smaller. The CEO of Slack envisions the old office becoming more like a hotel where workers pop in and out as needed. As they say in commercial real estate, watch this space. Speaking of spaces to watch, circle Wednesday on your calendar. That's when the state Supreme Court is set to hear oral arguments over whether to expand mail-in voting in Texas. On Friday, the court granted Attorney General Ken Paxton's request to stop the expansion of mail-in voting. Paxton says state laws permitting the disabled to vote by mail do not extend to people with a fear of getting sick. After Friday's decision, State Democratic Party Chairman Gilberto Hinojosa slammed the court as, quote, the new Republican death panel. So how about the governor's plan to reopen Texas? How's that going? Ross Ramsey's been writing about that. He's executive editor and co-founder of the Texas Tribune. Ross, welcome back to The Standard.
Hi, David. Thank you.
We should note that we are speaking on a Monday morning, and this afternoon, Governor Abbott is expected to have a news conference. So if you're listening on Monday night to the replay, some of this you may already be aware of, dear listener. But Ross, what are you expecting to hear from Governor Abbott later today when it comes to reopening?
You know, sort of an assessment of where we are. You know, he's watching the rate of reopenings against the advance of the coronavirus and seeing if reopening and reducing social distancing by allowing people in restaurants and stores increases the incidence of the virus spreading. And, you know, so we'll get a rundown on that. I think we're going to get a look at when bars are going to open and some of the places that haven't been allowed to open, and a look at how much more places that are already open can open. So restaurants can allow 25% of their seating to be used right now. That could increase to 50%. You could see the same thing maybe in malls. Maybe in movie theaters. We'll see exactly how quickly he's going to do all of this.
You know, you mentioned movie theaters. I know that there's been a lot of pressure to open tattoo parlors, too. Whatever happened to the initial rationale, though? I mean, we were talking about essential businesses once upon a time. And as more and more businesses open, well, what's essential?
Well, you get into this argument. You know, if you draw a line and say the first day, this is essential and this is not, that seemed to go pretty well. You know, they had things that you really had to have over here and things that, you know, maybe you could do without over there. As you open more and more businesses, you're playing with that definition and you're telling me that, you know, David Brown's business is essential and my business is not. And you get more and more noise and dissent from the people who are still closed. And that's exactly what's happening.
And that's, yeah, Governor Abbott sort of finds himself in a tricky place. How does he balance this, especially since we've been hearing in recent days that there's been a spike in confirmed coronavirus cases in Texas?
We had an increase over the weekend. And, you know, part of the deal here is if you let people interact socially more, the disease spreads a little bit more. And the idea here has always been to try to keep the spread of the disease below the capacity of the hospitals. So far, Texas has done pretty well with that. The increase over the weekend, 2 weeks after the governor started opening stores and restaurants and things is a little bit troublesome. But I think, you know, this is one of the things he's going to talk about today, you know, to see how the disease is advancing and how the economy is doing.
In fact, it seems like most of the cases are coming from parts of the panhandle. Most of the new coronavirus cases are coming from parts of the panhandle where there are meatpacking plants, and there's a whole lot more testing taking place there. But as the Texas Tribune is reporting today, El Paso is asking the governor to maybe exempt them from further orders when it comes to trying to reopen Texas. What's that about?
The county judge there and the legislative delegation say that El Paso is in a unique position, that the cases are still advancing out there. They would like to see 14 days of either decline or plateau in the coronavirus before they go ahead with the governor's statewide plan, and they're asking the governor to exempt them until they see those numbers get better.
A lot of this is, as many people see it, this is as much about politics as it is about public health and safety. How does the governor continue to try to track that one? This is a tough one.
Yeah, this is a trick, you know, and you see it all over the country. The balance of, you know, why are you restricting us in the way that you are is balanced by the advance of the disease. And the problem here is if you're successful with social distancing and you slow the advance of the disease, the reward is that nothing happens. And people, you know, turn their attention. I'm not getting sick, but my business is dying here. And so their attention has turned and their pain point and the political pressure point has changed. If the reopenings continue to go fairly well and the advance of the coronavirus is fairly restrained, then the governor's on the right track. If the coronavirus picks up some, he's going to have to change tax.
Read all about it over at texastribune.org, where Ross Ramsey is executive editor and co-founder. Ross, good to talk with you again, sir. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Thanks.
Today marks a new phase in the gradual reopening of the Texas economy. According to Governor Abbott's orders, some factories, offices, and gyms can reopen at 25% capacity, as we were hearing from Mr. Ramsey a few moments ago. The order also lays out recommendations for gym use, including remaining 6 feet apart from other folks, wearing a face mask, and regular sanitation of equipment. But are those measures enough to make gyms safe? Joining us now to tell us more is Dr. Rama Thiagarajan. She is an assistant professor of internal medicine at Dell Medical School at UT Austin and an infectious disease specialist. Dr. Thiagarajan, welcome to the Texas Standard.
Thank you for having me.
In your opinion, is it safe to go to gyms right now?
Since the COVID pandemic is still ongoing, the public should always be alert and attentive. We're still actively seeing cases in the community. Mm-hmm. We're seeing patients in the hospital. So I would say people need to individually, everyone needs to pay attention and assess their risk and decide whether to go to the gym.
We know that the virus can be spread through surface transmission. And so, of course, going back to the gym, there will be lots of wipes and that sort of thing, lots of soap and water, too. But we also know that the virus can be spread through respiratory droplets that infected people can breathe out, and presumably through sweat droplets, of which there might be quite a bit in a gym, I would think. No?
I would not worry as much as sweat causing spread of this virus. I would focus primarily on air spread through droplets. So that would be the primary mode of spread, by people getting close to each other and talking or sneezing or coughing and being within 6 feet. So I would not worry as much as the sweat. But if you think about why we need to have the environment clean and the surfaces clean, it's because people mm-hmm. can touch their mouth or nose and then touch the gym equipment or the frequently touched surfaces like doorknobs and handles. So it's more mm-hmm. about secretions rather than sweat. So that's why it's important for people to make sure that they use the cleaning equipment or cleaning wipes available in the gym and clean any surfaces that they will be touching and be very careful with that.
Let me ask you, if you are going to a gym and looking for specific practices, what would you be looking for as a sign that this is a safe place to go?
If I am a gym goer, so I would mm-hmm. I would really look to see the recommendation are to keep the numbers less than 25%. So I would look to see when I enter the gym, are there appropriate signs reminding people to be safe in regards to covering your cough and hand hygiene. I would look to make sure if people are appropriately delegated to be spaced more than 6 feet apart. And gyms should have an ability to allocate somebody who can make sure everybody's following proper precautions, whether it be hand hygiene, you know, covering your cough or other respiratory etiquette and spacing people, and also making sure high touch surfaces are cleaned properly. Also, after every use, if a patron leaves using a machine, then the equipment should be cleaned right after and before the next person starts using the machine. So those are the things I would be looking at when I enter the gym. You know, are there is there adequate signage? You know, is there enough, you know, hand hygiene, you know, alcohol sanitizers, wipes to clean the equipment? Uh-huh. And is there personal policing or making sure everybody is following all the needed recommendations?
Is it worth bringing a mask? Do you wear a mask while you try to exercise or no?
You know, the recommendation is to wear a mask by the CDC. It may be uncomfortable for people to wear a mask when they're exercising. It becomes when you're already breathing heavily, it may be difficult. Mm-hmm. But if able, I would recommend using a mask in the gym.
Dr. Rama Thiagarajan is an assistant professor of internal medicine at Dell Medical School at UT Austin and an infectious disease specialist. Dr. Thiagarajan, thank you so much for taking a few minutes out to talk with us on the Texas Standard. A lot of people will benefit from your suggestions.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, Michael Marks is doing the social media coverage on today's big broadcast. Michael, good to have you back.
Thanks, David. We have heard from the analysts and the experts about gyms reopening. Now, what about our listeners? Are they going back to the gym? We've got some responses here for you. This first one's from Stephen St. Clair. He writes, my CrossFit gym opened this morning, limiting capacity to 10 participants per class. We took extra care when cleaning after using the equipment, but man, am I glad to be back. We were attempting to keep working out from home, but the struggle was real. Others, though, not exactly rushing back to get those gains, David. On our Facebook page, Dennis Novak tells us his gym doesn't open till Friday. I'll think about doing it next week. And Brent Crockett is using the pandemic to justify some lifestyle changes. He writes he's not going back to the gym. In fact, I'm using COVID as a damn good excuse to never work out again. That's one way to do it, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, listen, we would love to hear from you, Texas. You know what to do. Just look for Texas Standard on your social media platform of choice. Michael Marks is looking for you. He's going to be back with more of the talk of Texas, in about 35 minutes or so. There's a whole lot more of the Texas Standard just around the corner. Stay with us.
Support for Texas Standard comes from the Texas ABLE program, helping eligible Texans with disabilities save and plan for the future to pay for qualified disability expenses with a tax-advantaged ABLE account. Learn more at texasable.org. Support for Texas Standard comes from Rand Group, partnering with small and mid-sized companies by helping to unify their businesses and achieve digital transformation. More at randgroup.com. Software delivered as promised. No surprises.
It's the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. As Texas and other states open up little by little, senior citizens are still advised to stay home. For many, that also means staying away from other people, including relatives who could transmit the virus. And for those who are alone, a furry companion can make a huge difference, if they can afford to have one. KTEP's Angela Kucherga reports on some folks hoping to help with that challenge.
She's white and has dark eyes, and her name is Bunny.
Carmen Lugo's Bunny was a puppy when she arrived on Easter morning 2013. And ever since, the retired hairdresser and her white poodle terrier mix have been inseparable.
She's turned out to be the best little dog. She does everything but talk.
The benefits of companion animals are well documented by research, but 75-year-old Lugo knows this firsthand.
Don't ever underestimate the power of a pet.
She and Bunny are often on their own.
But when I get to feeling lonely because we're by ourselves, it's like she knows, you know, and she'll come and she'll sit with me and I just pet her and love on her and the mood will go away.
Ruth Harris runs Therapet Elder Care of El Paso.
That is your best buddy right now.
The small nonprofit organization is a big help for Lugo and about 60 other senior citizens who otherwise could not afford pet food and veterinary care.
And our clients just love their animals. We had one who said that she had gone through cancer, and she said she didn't think she would have made it without her two little buddies.
The organization relies on donations, and Harris is worried about finances during the economic downturn.
I'm even scared to look at our accounts, quite frankly.
In the senior citizen apartment complex where Lugo lives, five other ladies with dogs depend on the organization, and she encounters others who need help.
I run into seniors that have pets. They tell me they have to sometimes make a decision as to whether to buy food for themselves or food for the dog.
She tells them there's help available for those who need it. She's grateful to TheraPet Elder Care for covering the cost of Bunny's food, medication, and vet care.
It helps. It helps a great, great deal.
In El Paso, I'm Angela Cocherga.
Support for coverage of business comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, providing community relief actions for the COVID-19 crisis, including early dividend distribution to eligible policyholders. More at texasmutual.com/dividends.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard. Today, the Texas Supreme Court statewide hold on eviction proceedings is no more. Some cities and counties have extended protections against evictions, and many renters are also covered under federal law, even if they and their landlords don't know it. Texas Public Radio's Dominic Anthony Walsh reports on the complicated mix of policies and what renters face as some eviction proceedings begin.
Nearly 2 million Texans have filed for unemployment benefits in recent weeks. Many more have lost jobs but can't file because the website is down or because the system is too complicated. Juanita De Leon is one of them. She worked at a bakery in San Antonio.
We don't have a job, you know, because of the virus and the lockdowns that we had and all this chaos that's going on.
De Leon has been unable to pay rent for several months. She lives at the Almost Club Apartments, where more than a dozen tenants were locked out of their units. When De Leon found the plastic lock on her door, she spoke to the property manager.
There was people that got laid off, and I was one of them. Why did he do it? He told me that if I didn't pay my rent on April the 27th, we were going to get evicted.
Edward Garza is the on-site property manager. He says the lockouts don't count as formal evictions.
Just because we put a lockout knock, that is not part of an eviction notice, a notice to vacate, or nothing. All it is just informing you that you have not paid your rent and you have access to the apartment. We have to let you into your apartment.
Garza says he placed locks on the doors of about 18 tenants. This tactic, at best, falls into a gray area legally.
So the CARES Act applies to federally subsidized housing, public housing.
That's Nelson Mock, a managing attorney with Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid. He's talking about the various protections provided by the CARES Act. Certain properties that receive federal funding are included in the new federal law.
And if you are a tenant that lives in these covered properties, the protections that you have include a 120-day period during which the landlord is not supposed to file an eviction case or initiate an eviction case. And then for all of those tenants, they are supposed to receive at least a 30-day notice to vacate once that period of the 120 days has passed.
And Almost Club Apartments is covered by the CARES Act. It can't issue notices to vacate until August. Some counties are forcing landlords to check on these protections before filing for an eviction. And other municipalities are assisting renters. Dallas County, the City of Houston, the City of San Antonio, and others are providing financial assistance to some people who lost income due to COVID-19. The City of Dallas also protects some renters from eviction if they can prove financial hardship as a result of COVID-19. Austin and San Marcos put a hold on formal notices to vacate until July at the earliest, and El Paso has halted notices to vacate and evictions until its local emergency order expires. And San Antonio City Council considered a similar ordinance. Remember, the CARES Act only applies to properties receiving federal funding. In San Antonio, that's already about half of all properties. The ordinance would have covered the other half. But when City Council took public comment on the ordinance, landlords spoke up.
We are opposed to the 60-day notice to vacate.
They said their profit margins are thin.
For many small business owners, a few non-revenue producing units can mean the difference between being in the black and being in the red.
The ordinance would deter investment and development.
I am a wife, a mother of two future real estate owners.
And would encourage people to not pay rent.
I guarantee you their plan is to live for free as long as they can and then move in the middle of the night.
And they threatened legal action.
Such actions to the city could be challenged as unconstitutional under the Texas Constitution. We urge you to vote no on this proposition. Thank you.
All right, please vote.
Nay.
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 No.
The ordinance failed with 5 yes votes and 6 no votes.
Motion fails. Okay, we'll move now.
In Bexar County, the courts aren't hearing any eviction cases until June 1st at the earliest. But once those deadlines roll around, advocates fear a wave of mass evictions. Nelson Mock says Texas law is unforgiving.
You know, that there's not a whole lot of grace built into the system. In fact, before the pandemic, I can tell you that I was in a court and I saw a landlord evict a tenant for owing $20.
And that shortage of grace in the legal system could put people out on the street during the extreme heat of a Texas summer and during a pandemic of a deadly virus. When the Federal CARES Act protections expire, Juanita De Leon, that renter from Almost Club Apartments, will have few options if she doesn't receive substantial assistance.
Well, for one, I don't have nowhere to go. So I would try to see where I can get help because I don't have any family members that are willing to help me. My people are deceased already.
And beyond those immediate serious concerns, evictions have a lasting impact on a person's finances. Mock says evictions show up on background and credit checks and can impact a person's ability to borrow money, get a job, buy a car, or rent another apartment. For Texans without the ability to pay rent, once local and federal protections expire, their immediate safety and financial futures are at the discretion of their landlords. I'm Dominic Anthony Walsh in San Antonio.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas CASA, advocating for a safe and positive future for all Texas children in the child protection system. Volunteer information at becomeacasa.org. Every child has a chance. It's you.
From the Texas Newsroom, I'm Joseph Leahy. Fort Hood is updating its COVID-19 guidelines for soldiers. As KUT's Becky Fogel reports, the general order applies to all individuals stationed at the Army base in Killeen.
Like much of Texas, Fort Hood is beginning to ramp up its operations, but with a number of public health measures in place. New guidelines announced Friday loosen some restrictions issued at the beginning of April. One change is that soldiers can begin receiving visitors at their homes or visit others as long as there are no more than 10 people at the residence. And while a curfew remains in place, it's now an hour shorter. The May 15th order says all individuals will wear face coverings in public areas when 6 feet of physical distance can't be maintained. The mask can't have printed wording, profanity, or imagery, among other things. I'm Becky Fogel in Austin.
Texas continues its phased reopening today with offices, non-essential manufacturers, and gyms allowed to operate at 25% capacity. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Department is also allowing camping in most state parks again. Initially, only some existing reservations will be honored. Agency spokesperson Stephanie Garcia explains some of the other restrictions in place.
One of them is the requirement of maintaining a 6-foot distance from people outside of their party, and those parties have to be no larger than 5. And it's 5 people. It can be from the same family or household.
Texas Parks and Wildlife also recommends people wear face coverings and bring their own hand sanitizer. As more businesses reopen, Houston's Transit Authority is expanding some of its park and ride service, which had been reduced in response to the coronavirus pandemic. Houston Public Media's Gail DeLauder has more.
Metro is resuming downtown park and ride service along all the major freeways, but that service is limited. Commuter buses will operate inbound from 5 to 9 a.m., and they'll head outbound from 3 to 7 p.m. Buses will run every 15 minutes, except for the Baytown bus that runs every 30 minutes. Metro is asking commuters to give themselves extra time for their trips because the buses may be making more stops than usual.
Gail DeLauder reporting. The Santa Fe High School community is holding several virtual events to remember the 10 people killed in a mass shooting at the Houston area campus 2 years ago today. The school district superintendent is hosting an online service this hour honoring victims and survivors. The alleged gunman is a former student. He remains under evaluation at a mental health facility to determine his competency for trial. I'm Joseph Leahy for the Texas Standard.
Support comes from UT Austin's Center for Professional Education, offering online health care and legal interpreter certificate programs for bilingual individuals looking to begin training for a new career. Learn more at professionaled.utexas.edu.
33 minutes past the hour, Texas Standard Time. I'm David Brown. Jobs, school, travel. While many parts of our lives have been stalled somewhat, not everything's come to a stop. For instance, the clock on that apartment lease keeps ticking. For some, when time's running out, people find themselves having to move. As KUT Austin's Audrey McGlinchey reports, moving during a pandemic brings its own set of challenges.
Sean Saldana decided earlier this year that at 23 years old, he was too old to still be living with his dad. Originally, he planned to move out this summer, but then the pandemic began. The questions he had about moving changed, from how much rent he could afford to...
Am I going to be able to move, or am I going to be, like, locked in this apartment, you know, by armed guards for the next 6 months? Like, will I be able to get a rental truck in 2 weeks?
So Saldana decided to move a bit earlier than planned. He found a one-bedroom in North Austin and moved in late March. No one from the leasing office was there to greet him. They left the door open and a welcome packet on the counter. But okay, move accomplished. Then Saldana went about setting his place up. He's in his early 20s, so he didn't own much furniture, and he was on a budget. Imagine trying to buy secondhand furniture while a virus is spreading.
So I'm on Craigslist asking people, like, have you had a dry cough in the past 2 weeks?
This led to some interesting interactions. For example, he went to one woman's house to buy a rug.
I showed up in my face mask, and then she was like, oh, I forgot to wear my face mask. It's fine, though. I already had coronavirus. I was like, damn it.
Saldana ended up buying the rug. The woman said she'd been healthy for weeks. Anyway, so he's got a new place, got some furniture now, but then his sink starts acting up. For some reason, when he runs the water, it ends up going into the dishwasher and then spilling out onto the kitchen floor. This would be a problem in normal circumstances. Hard to wash dishes, fill a glass with water. But during a pandemic, this also makes it hard to wash your hands. He called the apartment's maintenance guy.
Understandably, the maintenance guy was like, listen, we're not really coming out for repairs right now. There's just too much kind of up in the air. And his recommendation at the time was to just wash my dishes in the bathtub.
Saldana had to wait a couple weeks, but eventually the sink got fixed. All this is to say, moving is stressful. A global pandemic only magnifies these stressors. That's especially true for renters, who, according to census data, tend to move more often than homeowners and are lower income. Leases end, even during a pandemic, and sometimes can't be renewed. That's what happened to Vanessa Mitchell.
I had lived somewhere for nearly 5 years, and my landlord was planning to sell this summer.
Mitchell started looking for a place in March. She wanted to keep her risk of infection low, so decided to only see an apartment in person if she was pretty sure she'd rent it. So she went to check out a studio apartment in Tarrytown. When she got there, the landlord was ready.
She handed me Clorox wipes, you know, and I washed my hands when I got up to the place to look at it, and as soon as I got into my car, I Purelled my hands and, didn't touch my face until I got home so I could wash my hands again.
Mitchell liked the place so much she agreed to rent it that same day. She just wanted to get the stress of moving over with. But, of course, signing a lease and agreeing to pay, in Mitchell's case, $925 a month for the next year, that was also stressful. Mitchell works 3 jobs. She's been lucky to keep them so far, but the future is unclear.
Every once in a while it will creep up and, you know, make your chest tighten and make you want to call all your bosses, because I have multiple bosses, and get confirmation, like, I'm going to have a job for the next year, right?
There's some evidence that fewer people are moving right now. One Austin moving company told me business was down 11% compared to this time last year. Another company, business is down 40%. For those who do need to find a new place, leasing agents say they're trying to avoid showing currently occupied units, putting both the current and future tenants at risk. They're offering self-guided or virtual tours of apartments. That's how Travis Hijak did it when he had to interview potential roommates for a house he rents with his girlfriend in North Austin.
We did a video chat where we walked them through the house on the call so they could see it. So nobody actually saw it in person before our current roommate actually moved in.
Once they picked a new roommate, the next question was, do we ask her to self-isolate for the first 2 weeks? It wasn't something Hijak could bring himself to do.
I wouldn't want to ask somebody to just quarantine in their room, not feel welcome in the rest of the house. I mean, I understand why that might be a consideration.
He wanted to inject the moving process with a bit of normalcy. At the very least, moving still sounds the same. There's the packing, the lugging of boxes, the unpacking. I should know, I'm moving today. I'm Audrey McGlinchey in Austin.
Support for Texas Standard comes from the Texas College Savings Plan, administered by the state of Texas. Families can save for tuition, room and board, books, and other qualified education expenses at eligible schools nationwide. Learn more at texascollegesavings.com. Support for Texas Standard comes from the Texas Association of Community Colleges, providing pathways for Texans to advance the individual aspirations of students while focusing on accessibility, affordability, and relevance. More at tacc.org.
My name is Tracy Long. I am a teacher at Abilene, Texas at Adams High School. We started getting emails from our administration about what they were planning to do if something happened, starting almost at the beginning of spring break. My son, just a few days later, came home because he got a call from Angeles State saying they had canceled classes. And then his girlfriend moved in with us because her parents live in Austin. And they didn't want her going back to Austin because she's a type 1 diabetic. I'm an asthmatic, and my son is an asthmatic too, so we're both in those high-risk categories. Well, a couple of months ago, I was in the classroom with my kids. I teach physics at the high school, and there are a lot of kids that have special needs. There are a lot of kids who come from broken homes, just like any teacher will tell you. And I think the most radical departure from my life has been going from a place where I know I'm making a safe place for the kids who are in my classroom to worrying about the kids who were in my classroom because I don't know if they're safe. I've got a lot of kids who are either children of police officers or firefighters or nurses, and that's really hard. And I worry about them because I can hear the stress in their voice. They're worried. And I think as a teacher, that's probably our most difficult job right now is, I'll be honest, I'm kind of scared. Our school at Adams was part of a project with Wiley where it was kind of a competition where we competed to see who could make robots for the local hospital, Hendricks Hospital, because they needed a way to save their PPE. And we were able to provide Hendricks Hospital with 6 robots that they're using right now with their coronavirus patients that are actually in hospital. And basically what we did was we took a hospital tray table where they, you know, what they served meals on next to the bed, and we motorized it. Well, I got an email from one of my students who said that she just was FaceTiming with her aunt who is in the hospital for COVID, is one of our first patients. And one of the first things that they got from her was that she was amazed because she asked for an extra blanket and a robot drove in the blanket on a bedside table. And it just made me proud because that was one of the robots that we built. There's so much on the internet right now about how parents are doing a bad job with homeschool. They're not. They're doing a great job. They're doing an amazing job. Our classrooms are never perfect. Kids struggle all the time in our classrooms, and we're the professionals who do it. And so when your kid is struggling and they're not getting things perfect, it's okay. It's fine. You're doing a great job as a parent homeschooling your kid. We're building patience, and we're building perseverance, and we're building durability. And nothing bad comes from these qualities. Pray. That's the main thing I want to share. I've got my in-laws that I'm taking care of who are both over the age of 65. I've got three people in my household that are high risk. And about the only thing that we can do is pray. And there's power in prayer. I'm Tracy Long from Abilene, Texas. You're listening to the Texas Standard.
You're on Texas Standard Time. I'm David Brown. Sir Edward Cook is credited with a common law maxim that, quote, one's home is one's castle, though these days that castle might feel more like a prison to some. But in North Texas, KERA's Bill Zeebel found a princess wandering her realm, bringing joy to some shut-in subjects.
Unless you're a Disney character, not every princess sings.
Singing's actually the thing I've been doing the least amount of time.
Maya Hernandez Pearson is a 20-year-old musical theater major at Sam Houston State University. Because of the coronavirus, her college is closed, so she's back home in East Dallas.
My parents were both involved in the Dallas theater scene, so I've been on stage my whole life, and I've actually been dancing, I think, probably the longest.
At home, though, Hernandez Pearson was doing no dancing or acting. Cabin fever set in.
I sat around my house for I probably about a week and a half, just being so upset and sad, as, you know, a melodramatic theater person does. And so then one day my mom goes, hey, I think I have an idea.
I said, well, you have a talent. You can make people happy singing songs. Princesses make everybody happy.
Maya's mom, Christy Hernandez, was herself a professional dancer, actor, and drama teacher. She posted Maya's availability to sing for free in the neighborhood and got takers, like Lyndon Nelson.
It's crazy being home with a toddler trying to entertain and all while staying safe.
Nelson and 3-year-old son Knox watch elated from their porch as a blonde, blue-gowned princess appears in the front yard from an appropriate distance.
Oh my gosh, Knox, who's coming?
Her accompanying royal orchestra, contained in the noble laptop, nestle in the grass at her feet.
Who is that? It's Elsa?
Let it go, can't hold it back anymore. Let it go, turn away and slam the door. I don't.
Okay, technically, Elsa's a queen, not a princess, and legally, Maya is not singing the role, just the song, and not getting paid. At least, not in dollars.
Just seeing that moment where their eyes light up when they see me get out of the car and they're like, oh, there's a princess walking towards me and, you know, unfortunately 6 feet away from me. But having that moment is just makes me so happy, and it's something I hope to be able to do for the rest of my career.
Hernandez Pearson's career is, she hopes, just getting started. Meanwhile, she may carve out a temporary COVID-forced gig singing in princess parties, as they're known to parents and kids around the world, at least until she heads back to college, whenever that may be. She certainly generated interest from her appearances throughout her Dallas neighborhood. Interest and joy.
Bye-bye, Elsa! I love you!
You'll never see me cry. Here I stand, and here I'll stay.
I'm Bill Zeebel in Dallas.
Through the air.
Coming up on 49 Minutes Past the Hour.
Support for Texas Standard comes from TCU, dedicated to improving healthcare in North Texas and around the world through pursuits like the new TCU and UNTHSC School of Medicine, educating empathetic scholars. TCU, lead on. Support for Texas Standard comes from Raise Your Hand Texas, working to strengthen public education for all students. More information at raiseyourhandtexas.org. The future of Texas is in our public schools.
You got to tune to the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. The price of Texas crude may have plummeted, but that's not stopping plans for a major oil exporting terminal off the coast of Brazoria County. Once built, it would be able to load large tankers that can transport up to 2 million barrels of oil at a time. But residents and environmentalists are worried this project could impact public health and wildlife and one endangered creature in particular. Houston Public Media's Katie Watkins reports.
If you get on State Highway 288 and drive south for about an hour from Houston, you'll arrive in Surfside Beach, population 600. The quiet town butts up against the Brazoria National Wildlife Refuge, and the endangered Kemp's Ridley sea turtles lay their eggs on its beaches. Donna Robinson has lived in Surfside for over 20 years.
We have butterfly migrations that come through, every kind of coastal bird you can think of. It's just a very quaint, lovely community with lovely people that live here.
Now, Surfside sits in the path of a major oil project from two midstream operators. Enterprise and Enbridge want to build a deepwater oil port 30 miles offshore. They need a pipeline to transport the crude from a terminal in Houston. And that pipeline would cut through Surfside. But Robinson and other residents say they didn't even learn about the project until March, when an environmental group held a meeting.
They haven't even contacted people. They were just trying to slip it in.
Robinson says one of her main fears is an oil spill, like Deepwater Horizon.
There was to be a spill or something, it would affect me. It would affect the entire island. This is a very beautiful little community, and we don't want that here.
Similar projects have popped up since 2015, when the U.S. lifted its ban on exporting crude. And as companies race to build these offshore export terminals, coastal communities across the Gulf Coast are feeling anxious. With this project, environmental groups and even some Texas state agencies say it would impact wetlands, the Gulf of Mexico, and air quality. Another concern, the endangered Kemp's Ridley sea turtles. Joni Steinhaus is with the Turtle Island Restoration Network.
We are the northernmost region for the Kemp's Ridleys to nest. And again, they're critically endangered, so every nest, every egg is extremely important to the population.
She helps run a turtle patrol that looks for nests along the upper Texas coast. So far this year, they found two nests on Surfside Beach. Since turtles usually return to the same place to lay eggs, she worries how construction would affect their nesting.
They may or may not try to come back in another area of the coast, and when they're ready, they could potentially dump their eggs out in the Gulf of Mexico if they're not comfortable. And that year or two of construction would have a huge impact on the population if these turtles were not able to nest.
Steinhaus says the danger doesn't stop with construction.
We would be concerned about the boat traffic. Of course, turtles get hit by boats all the time. Again, the potential for a spill would be huge.
The project's draft environmental impact statement says the project could affect at least one turtle nesting season, but downplayed any long-term impact. It called risks from boat strikes and oil spills not quantifiable. And some are wondering if the project is even needed with the oil downturn. Enterprise denied a request for an interview, but a spokesperson confirmed the company is still pursuing the deepwater license. Sandy Fielden, a commodities researcher at Morningstar, says it's a matter of wait and see.
The belief is that there will be, sooner or later, a recovery that will revitalize the requirement to build a more efficient offshore terminal to handle these larger tankers.
In the meantime, Fielden says the permitting process doesn't cost the companies very much. So the process for approving this project in Surfside goes on. People can comment on the project until the end of May. I'm Katie Watkins.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard. Michael Marks is monitoring social media on this Monday. Howdy there, Michael.
Hey, David. What's going on?
Not a whole lot. What are you up to?
Keeping an eye on what Texans are talking about. They've got a lot to say about some of the news breaking this morning on the vaccine front. Right now, dozens of drug companies across the globe sprinting to complete a coronavirus vaccine. One of them announced today they'd made some progress. Moderna, that's a biotech company from Massachusetts, they've completed their first phase of human trials. The results so far show that the vaccine is safe and can catalyze an immune system response against the virus. Now for some caveats. These reports come from the first eight people involved in these trials. The vaccine will require much more broader, rigorous testing before it's made available. So it's worth emphasizing that it's the early days here. Nonetheless, the Federal Drug Administration has cleared the company to move on to the next phase of testing. That's inspired some optimism on Wall Street. 25% jump in Moderna stock this morning.
Yeah, I saw that. Gee whiz, holy cow.
On social media, though, not so much. Some folks especially concerned about the speed with which this is happening. That includes Chandra in Houston. She tweets, we're just supposed to assume it's safe for them to take this vaccine when normal vaccine safety testing would take years. Likewise, in Dallas, Twitter user Slim Ryder says he's unsure if he'd even get the vaccine once it's made available. He writes in part, I'm highly skeptical. Usually those take years to develop. You also see your share, David, of defiant responses from folks who oppose vaccinations. Over on our Facebook page, John E. Davis predicts we'll see folks go from protesting being ordered to wear a mask in public to protesting being told to get a vaccine. Seems possible, if not likely, regardless of what healthcare professionals tell us is the safest course of action.
I don't know whether you saw this. Is I see that that story is top of the page at New York Times. I don't know whether you saw this news from the business world over the weekend. JCPenney, which is based up in North Texas, filing for bankruptcy on Friday, becomes the second major retailer from Texas, no less. Neiman Marcus, of course, filed a little bit earlier. Interesting story. The Times also reporting here that since chains like JCPenney accounts for about 30% of the total mall square footage in the U.S., a lot of retail analysts are even more fearful than they had been before that we're going to see a collapse in malls. But, of course, that's been predicted for as long as I can remember, almost,
time,
right?
David, there's no question. You know, that said, though, you wonder if the mall may be, you've seen some repurposing of malls. But you wonder the fate of large indoor spaces writ large, so to speak.
Malls
certainly among them.
What else you seeing out there, Michael?
David, we've also got some of this news coming out from El Paso. As we wanted to share, that Governor Abbott is expected to make an announcement regarding the continued phased reopening of the state's economy. El Paso communities say we'd like to be left out. That's at least what the county judge is saying. Ricardo Seminiago said they'd like to be excluded from the reopening because of rising numbers of COVID cases there. I think 2 o'clock is when we will hear what the governor has planned for that phased reopening. Positive cases in El Paso County, David, up 67% over the first 2 weeks of May, and deaths doubled.
We're out of time for the big broadcast, but on behalf of Michael Marks and the rest of the Texas Standard crew, I'm David Brown. Keep up with the news over at texasstandard.org.
Support comes from Texas Children's Hospital, focused on outcomes and care, and providing treatment to kids in the Lone Star State and beyond for more than 60 years. Texas Children's Hospital, personalized care for every child. More at texaschildrens.org. Philanthropic support for Texas Standard comes from Casey and Scott O'Hare, the Winkler Family Foundation, Lynn Dobson and Greg Wooldridge, Adrian Killam, and the George Huntington family.